Chapter 6. Neild comes over with takeout. Brought Nerf burgers, he says proudly as he drops the bag onto the coffee table. You're the best, Obi-Wan says with a wide smile. For how big a Star Destroyer is, the food's very... drab. Neild laughs. You mean it sucked. I don't know what I'd do with myself if I had to eat that every day. Obi-Wan shakes his head and drops down onto the couch next to Neild. He grabs one of the takeout boxes and lets out a delighted sigh at the sight of his Nerf burger, with extra cheese, bless Neild, and curly fries. Oh, don't be dramatic. Neild rolls his eyes fondly. You'd be fine. He picks up his own burger. I think I deserve to be a little dramatic, Obi-Wan says, before taking a bite with a satisfied hum. I suppose, Neild says around a mouthful of food. He waves a hand at Obi-Wan, including burger, and Obi-Wan supposes he's lucky the other doesn't drip sauce all over his couch. You did have a shit week or two. Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow. You think? This is worse than when the Republic came to us last year. Neild scoffs around a bite of burger, which promptly goes down the wrong pipe, and he ends up a coughing mess. Technically, this is still the Republic's fault, he says, a small wheeze to his voice. Obi-Wan takes another bite, buying himself some time to think the statement over. I'm not sure, he says carefully. Considering he was attacked by separatist vessels, he really doubts the Republic is involved. But I'll hear more from Delia tomorrow. They're going to interrogate you tomorrow. It's not an interrogation if I want to share the information, Obi-Wan shrugs. But yes, I'm meeting her at 8. Neild winces. Early start. Obi-Wan chuckles. He himself has never had much of a problem with early mornings. In fact, he quite enjoys it when Zahava is only just waking up. The city feeling drowsy and slow as the sun rises over the flax fields. Neild, however, would very much prefer it if the day would start at lunch rather than breakfast. I should be fine. The Maverick's night cycle wasn't very different from ours. Plus, I'll be here to wake you up if you oversleep, Neild tells him with a grin. Obi-Wan frowns. Excuse me? What? Neild shoots back, feigning innocence, which really doesn't work when he's stuffing a rather obnoxiously large bite of his burger into his mouth. Obi-Wan puts down his burger. You're not staying over. Of course I am, Neild protests. You're still healing. Healing, yes, not dying, Obi-Wan retorts, shaking his head. He appreciates the concern, but it's rather unnecessary. I'm fine, honestly. Neild shrugs. I'm still going to sleep on your couch. Neild, Obi-Wan sighs, and resists the urge to pinch the bridge of his nose at his friend's stubbornness. No. Neild grins, wide and sharp, and a teasing glint in his eyes. Neild, yes, he counters, and then, in a rather sweet tone, adds, I even promised Cerasi. He promised Cerasi because, of course, he knows Obi-Wan's soft spot. I can call her quick if you want, Neild offers casually, before shoving his last piece of burger into his mouth. Obi-Wan sighs. He knows how calling Cerasi will go. Even if Neild hasn't promised her to sleep over, she will play along when they call, turn her big, blue eyes to Obi-Wan, and say it's only for the best, it's only because they care, and because they all know Obi-Wan's almost incapable of denying Cerasi anything when she pleads with him, Neild will stay. Fine, he grunts. No need to interrupt Cerasi's evening for something he'll be corrupted into doing anyway. We can share the bed, he says. Neild is too tall for the couch, and Obi-Wan doesn't want to spend the next few days listening to the other complain about sensitive joints and an aching back because of cramped sleeping conditions again. Neild smirks. Sucker. Obi-Wan makes a face, which is dissatisfaction and betrayal, not a pout. I take it back. Neild just laughs. Obi-Wan flicks a fry at him. Later, when they've gone to bed, Neild murmurs into the darkness of Obi-Wan's bedroom. "We almost lost you." Obi-Wan swallows. Had expected the words, or something at the very least, spoken in the safety of the dark. What he hadn't expected was for Neild to lower his shields just so Obi-Wan can feel the distress and anguish Neild had felt during Obi-Wan's disappearance. "I know." Neild sighs, deep and long and full of old grief. "It's not our war." Soldiers in clone armor in the streets of Zahava, hyena bombers dropping bomb after bomb, destroying all that they have worked so hard to rebuild. Smoke, ash, death. "I know," Obi-Wan whispers. "I don't." Neild starts and then breaks off. The sheets rustle, and Obi-Wan can feel the mattress dip as the other turns around, most likely onto his side so he can look at Obi-Wan, even if he won't see much in the dark. "Those clones, I don't know what they told you or what you did with them, but they're individuals, you realize that, right?" Obi-Wan interrupts. His tone is sharp and disapproving. There's a hint of hesitation in the Force, but no actual answer. "Neild," Obi-Wan mumbles his friend's name. He knows that Neild is more likely to take a grudge to the grave than let it go. Knows that he is against the Republic, the Jedi, and the war. But this isn't necessarily about that. This isn't even about the Gar. It's about the clones and their individuality. Obi-Wan isn't too big to admit it's not something he'd thought about before being on the Maverick. But for all that he'd tried to not think about the clones and the implications of their existence, he'd never considered them anything but an army of breathing, thinking, and feeling sentience. Surely Neild must feel the same. Neild huffs. "I do, Obi-Wan. Fuck, I'm not some hater that thinks they're just droids. They're just..." He hesitates. He must be worrying his lower lip between his teeth, as he always does when he's considering his words. Like, if he doesn't, he will blurt them out without preamble. After a few agonizing silent moments, he whispers, "They are the war. They are everything we should stay away from." Obi-Wan swallows. "They are, aren't they?" This time, it's him that doesn't answer. "Obi-Wan?" Neild questions, sounding disappointed. He doesn't need Obi-Wan's words to know. "I know you loved that man in your vision, but that's not our reality anymore." Obi-Wan thinks of Cody, of a resilient and familiar Force presence, of kind amber eyes, and of the warmth of a palm he'd never really touched. He thinks of the comlink number he saved. He stares up at the ceiling. "I know," he whispers, grateful that Neild is as Force-sensitive as a rock. He'd have easily felt the lie if he was. It only takes a few days before Obi-Wan's life settles into a new routine. Wake up, have morning coffee with Delia to catch up on the investigation, which is moving at the speed of a broken speeder, which is to say, not at all. And then do some work, whether that be flimsy work, attending meetings or holocalls with other planetary leaders or organizations to strengthen relations. After lunch, he has his daily PT session, after which he's been instructed to take it easy for the rest of the day. Considering he still feels tired and unfocused that time of day, he obliges. This afternoon, he's taken Sarasi's son Hugo out to Het Velumir for some skating. It's the depth of winter, and they've finally had enough frost to allow the lake to freeze over solidly enough that the all-clear for skating has been given. Obi-Wan isn't allowed to skate. Pepine had raised a very judgmental eyebrow at him when he'd mentioned going out to the lake this afternoon during their session, had merely said that if Obi-Wan would even dare to think of going on the ice, then surely Roeni would hear those thoughts and come to break his other ribs for free. So, Obi-Wan dresses himself in his thick wool coat, drapes a scarf around his neck, and puts on his warmest gloves as he stands at the edge of the lake to watch the 6-year-old slither over the ice. Hugo, however, doesn't fall once, something he proudly tells his mother when Obi-Wan brings him home a few hours later. Sarasi strokes Hugo's hair back and kisses his forehead, tells him that, "You must be really good then," while giving Obi-Wan a pointed look over the boy's head. Obi-Wan looks away with a pleased grin. "Tea?" he asks. "Hot chocolate," Hugo cheers. "Hot chocolate what?" Cerasi asks. "Please," Hugo tacks on. Cerasi hums. "Good. After you get changed, though," she says, and when Hugo races off to his room, gives Obi-Wan a pointed look. "Thanks for that. He's gonna think he's invincible next time." Obi-Wan chuckles. "Confidence helps to improve balance." Cerasi scoffs. "Then you can deal with the tantrum next time his confidence isn't standing at the edge of the lake manipulating his skating skills." "I wasn't helping much," Obi-Wan protests. "Just a nudge here and there." Cerasi starts making her way over to the kitchen. "Uh-huh." "Well, I'm not allowed on the ice to physically help him. I have to make do," Obi-Wan defends himself with a helpless shrug. When they enter the kitchen, the rich and almost heavy smell of spices and meat hits him like a warm blanket, and he brightens immediately. "You're making hashe?" Hashe is a melodon stew made of beef, onions, flour, bouillon, and wine. Its thick gravy is rich in flavor with pepper, cloves, and laurel leaves, and Cerasi always serves it with some red cabbage, applesauce, and boiled potatoes. It's one of Obi-Wan's favorite homemade winter foods. Cerasi hums in confirmation. "I assume you're staying over for dinner," she asks teasingly, grabbing a spatula and stirring the hashi that's slowly cooking in the cast iron pan on the stove. "Only if I'm welcome." "You dummy," she says, and waves her spatula at him. "You're always welcome." Hugo's sitting in the next room doing his homework, and Cerasi and Obi-Wan are drinking tea at the round table in the kitchen, placed opposite the stove besides a big window overlooking the park across the street. "I'll start the potatoes in half an hour, so they're done when Milu gets home," Cerasi says, and smiles against the rim of her mug. "She'll be happy to see you too." Cerasi and Milu have been married for 7 years now. They met when Milu had just moved to Melodon from the terrestrial moon Gaul and had been offloading some moving boxes from her small ship. Milu couldn't see properly with the boxes obscuring her vision, and Cerasi had been too engrossed in her conversation with Delia to avoid a collision. Nowadays, a reconstructed plate hangs in the hallway of their home, and the women have matching tattoos on their wrists of the blue flower pattern. "We've all been really worried." Cerasi's eyes dart to the other room, where her son is softly muttering to himself as he works on his homework. "That's why Hugo was desperate to go skating with you." "You told him what happened?" Cerasi looks down at her mug. "Yes, it's having to sit him down and explain it to him made me realize how privileged we are. I know we suffered, but to see that our children don't know war, it's all we ever wanted." She looks up and gives Obi-Wan a wry smile. "But now you got dragged into one again anyway." "It's all right," Obi-Wan almost says. Doesn't. "Let's hope this was all," he says instead. Somehow, the words feel just as much of a lie as saying he was fine would have been. He has a bad feeling about this still, an inkling of a feeling telling him this is far from over. Cerasi's frown shows she must be feeling the same, although there is nothing but certainty in her tone as she says, "We will make sure it is." A promise she won't be able to keep if war decides to come knocking on their door. "I just hope it ends soon," Obi-Wan admits. "For the whole galaxy. Padme is close to losing her hope. The amount of refugees the IRCA helps is absolutely heartbreaking, and so many of the clones die." Obi-Wan thinks of all the pauldrons he'd seen hanging on the corridor walls of the Maverick, knows that he's only seen a fraction of the amount, and then that's only the Maverick. One ship in a whole fleet with millions of men dying every day. It's terribly unfair. But here on Melodon, even if they wanted to, there is nothing they can do but wait and see, and hope that it is not them that is next. The task force investigating Obi-Wan's attempted assassination has taken over the top floor of the Melodon governmental building. They call it the Grand Hall, as it was designed with state visits in mind. The Duracrete ceiling and walls are a light gray, with the long sides of the rectangular room made up of mostly floor-to-ceiling windows set in oak window frames, a rarity on Melodon. The big table in the middle of the room is made of the same oak, standing on black Melodon marble tiles that cover the whole floor. Now, though, the oak table has been turned into a desk space. The soft murmur of planetary dignitaries has morphed into almost frantic discussions, and instead of soft, yellow lighting from the built-in light strips on the ceiling, the room is cast in a blue glow with all the holo projectors. "It looks like a lot, but it's only for show, I'm afraid," Delia says in greeting as she walks up to Obi-Wan. She beckons for him to follow her, and they make their way over to the far end of the room, where she's got her own desk set up. "Realistically, we don't have anything." Obi-Wan frowns when he sits down on the other side of the desk from Delia. Captain Panaka wasn't any help. It's a disappointment, he will admit. They'd held out hope that a conference call with the head of security for the Royal Naboo Security Forces would at least lead to something. "Oh, he helped raise a question," Delia says with a woeful sigh, and a wave of her hand. Not that he could answer it, of course. "Of course," Obi-Wan echoes, resisting the urge to sigh, as if they needed more questions. Which question did the captain raise? Delia pulls up a holo and projects the route between Naboo and Melodon. He pointed out that the Trillius trade route is controlled by the Hutts. Her finger follows the route from Naboo to Farstein and then to the edge of the Rendellian sector. This is nearing the edge of Republic space. The captain was wondering if it could be possible you were attacked by the Hutts. They wouldn't do it in the middle of Republic space, but you were right at the edge. They could even have used the Vulture droids as a cover to make it seem as if it were the Separatists. Place the blame somewhere else. Obi-Wan just raises an eyebrow. "I'd say it's a bit far-fetched, don't you agree?" Delia just shrugs, looking tired. "At this point, who knows?" "We've never been in contact with the Hutts," Obi-Wan counters. "Plus, I wasn't even in hyperspace, so wasn't using the actual trade route." Delia leans her elbows on the desk with a thoughtful hum. "Which might make it even more suspicious, don't you think? Maybe they thought you were smuggling spice right under their noses." "It's a creative idea, Obi-Wan will give the captain that. Certainly easier to explain than a Separatist attack. However, I doubt they'd use Separatist ships to settle their scores." "What reason would the Separatists have? Retribution because we spoke to the Republic?" Delia huffs, the right corner of her lips curling. "And that isn't far-fetched?" Obi-Wan strokes his beard, eyes turning to the holomap with a thoughtful frown. There must be something that could explain the attack. That's when a dinner conversation from a few months ago comes to his mind, when Neild, Sarasi, Milu, Delia, Rowenny, and Hem had had their last get-together. "Didn't Milu mention last time she was home she heard whispers of Gaul thinking about withdrawing from the Republic?" he asks, waving at the Cadavine sector on the holomap, their sector. "Zar is sure to follow if they do, and the Trade Federation used to have a droid foundry on Eos," he continues, trying to form those rumors into a plausible cause, especially since the Force seems to encourage him to do so. Maybe he's onto something here. Delia frowns. "I mean, the factory was destroyed 20 years ago, wasn't it? Doesn't mean the Trade Federation has completely left, and they're certainly sided with the Separatists. If Gaul and Zar withdraw from the Republic..." He trails off with a frown. Is this rumor turning into a truth they'd been surrounded with but had refused to see? Was war already looming on their doorstep before Hem meeting the Gar? Can Gaul even leave? Delia asks worriedly. Don't they have some naval supply depot there that's important to the Republic? Obi-Wan laughs, although there's very little humor in it. Last I heard, the Republic was democratic, which means planets can leave. Theoretically, of course. Delia hums. Would be a hard hit for the Republic. And a major win for the Separatists. So, why get us involved? Delia wonders, turning to the map and zooming in on their sector. If half the Cadavine sector is affiliated with the Separatists and the other half is independent, wouldn't you want to keep it that way if you were the Separatists? Obi-Wan asks, even if he already knows the answer. The Separatists don't seem the type of people to leave something to luck or chance. Delia raises an eyebrow. So you're saying they got the wrong idea after the Republic's visit last year and then your trip to Naboo, and now they want to scare us out of considering joining the Republic? Obi-Wan leans back against his chair, stroking his beard-covered chin. Perhaps. It's not even an option we're looking at, Delia cries, sounding affronted. They could have just asked. In war, no one just asks anything. Obi-Wan shakes his head. Besides, it's just a thought. But it sounds more plausible than the Hutts having somehow obtained Separatist ships and using those to shoot me down in protection of their smuggling routes. If we're a threat to anyone, it's certainly not the Hutts. Delia's eyes flicker to the windows that look out over Zahava, their relatively small capital that's mostly known for its linen and black marble. We aren't a threat to anyone. We don't want to be, but the Republic has already tried to get us involved. Who is to say the Separatists aren't waiting for that same opportunity? Obi-Wan asks, a sinking feeling in his stomach. They should have, perhaps, considered the option. He should set up a meeting with Sarasi and Neild to discuss it. Silence falls between them, neither having an answer to the unwanted question. Delia, however, never stays silent for long. What worries me is that they attacked the Gar as well. Obi-Wan raises an amused eyebrow at his friend. I was shot down, and that's what worries you. Shut up, Delia says with a grin and a dismissive wave of her hand, and then asks, do you know if the Gar is officially investigating? Obi-Wan chuckles, because this is what he likes about Delia. She doesn't care much for pretense or politeness, and always prefers to speak her mind, even if sometimes people take it the wrong way. Especially Neild, whose temper can be quick to flare. Not the crash, he answers, but I imagine they will look into the Separatist attack. Delia hums. Any chance you can get your hands on that investigation? Obi-Wan thinks back to Jin's words to rekindle, how just before reaching Meladon, Jin had given Obi-Wan his comm code and a small, hopeful smile along with it. He sighs. I can try. He'd never thought he would be the one reaching out to Jin. In fact, he had only accepted the comm because it would give him the chance to find out Jin's endgame. Rekindling might sound nice on paper, but Obi-Wan still believes it to be a bit too big of a coincidence. Which, he realizes, is exactly what he is using it for now. Sure, he is reaching out for information, but Jin's response, will it be understanding or suspicion, will give away at least part of his intentions. Yet, somehow, it feels off. It's not a tangible feeling, nothing concrete, just a weight in the pit of his stomach and a somewhat disappointed twirl in the Force as he picks up his comm. He ignores it for now, before he actually manages to talk himself out of contacting Jin. He will meditate afterwards. It takes a while before the call is answered, and Obi-Wan is about to end it and try again later when a tired voice answers.
Jin.
General, Obi-Wan greets, opting for the man's Gar title rather than Master, a word that still feels heavy in his chest.
Ah, Obi-Wan.
Jin sounds more awake almost instantly.
A pleasure, even if your timing is slightly unfortunate. We're in the middle of our night cycle.
Oh, my apologies. I can contact you later, Obi-Wan offers. Jin chuckles.
Nonsense. I am awake now. Your return to Meladon went smoothly.
Yes, it is good to be home, Obi-Wan says with a smile. It's quick to disappear, though, as he adds. Our investigation into the attack, however, is far from smooth.
That is unfortunate.
I thought that perhaps you can help.
Ah, did you?
Jin asks, a disappointed ring to his voice. Obi-Wan doesn't feel guilty at the man's realization that this isn't a social call, truly. Yes, is the Gar investigating the attack? Jin sighs.
We are, although not with any priority.
With a war to fight, it's understandable that there is no time to spend on investigating why your troops were attacked. However, it wasn't an outright no, and so Obi-Wan soldiers on. May I inquire if you have any leads?
Inquiring is free.
An answer isn't, I suppose. Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow.
It's more that this is potential classified information you are asking for, Obi-Wan,
Jin says, managing to sound both serene and admonishing at the same time. Obi-Wan resists the urge to sigh. He's not a young Padawan being reprimanded, even if the man on the other side of the call can apparently make him feel like that still. I understand. To Obi-Wan's surprise, however, Jin continues. His voice is a tad softer now, as if he's sharing a secret that must not be overheard.
Not that there is much to share, other than the fact that the abandoned Separatist outpost wasn't as abandoned as initially thought.
And I tripped the alarm.
Your crash certainly might have,
Jin says, which really isn't any help at all. Obi-Wan isn't really interested in knowing why the Gar was attacked. He wants to know why he was.
But that is only speculation, of course. In reality, Cadavine isn't a sector that's caused us issues.
Jin pauses for a moment before asking,
Would you know of any changes in the sector by any chance?
He does. Of course he does. It's part of the reason why he reached out in the first place. To see where the Republic's investigation is leading, if there are any other rumors to uncover. He's just not sure whether he should share that with Jin. One never gives away their hand in a game of sabacc, after all, and contacting the man is a gamble in and of itself. When Obi-Wan reaches out into it in the hopes of finding an answer, he's met with a sense of caution, a call of attention, a warning, even if very small. A worry, for sure. No, he says, deciding that a lie is a greater benefit in this case than garnering more suspicion onto both himself and Melodon. We are not really involved in our sector's politics.
A relief for you and a pity for us, Jin says with a sigh. Perhaps you could let me know if a rumor reaches you.
And perhaps you can let me know if anything new arises in your investigation, Obi-Wan shoots back.
Of course,
Jin says. His tone is nothing but pleasant politeness, but it still sounds like a lie.
But as I said, this investigation carries little priority. Now, Triumvir.
Ah, back to titles then.
If that was all, I'd like to catch some more sleep.
Of course, General. Thank you for your time. Jin hangs up without further goodbyes, leaving Obi-Wan sitting on his living room couch, surrounded by frustrated silence and his comm in his hand. He goes to turn it off and accidentally swipes the screen onto the next contact in his list, Commander Cody. He lingers for a moment. Cody had given Obi-Wan his comm code, but Obi-Wan hadn't given the commander his, meaning that any contact will have to be initiated by Obi-Wan. Yes, the Force urges with satisfaction. He hesitates. I shouldn't. The Force tugs at him with insistence and annoyance, not unlike a petulant child throwing a temper tantrum. No, he says firmly, and turns off his comm. It's not his reality anymore, like Neald had said, and he shouldn't try to change that, no matter how right the Force makes it feel. Obi-Wan calls a meeting with Sarasi, Neald, and Delia the next day. Something is going on in the sector, he says without preamble, the moment they've all sat down at the round meeting table in his office. He pulls up their sector's holomap and lets Delia share what they'd discussed the day before. From the rumors to the unrest on Gaul and Zar to them theorizing about the Separatists potentially trying to get a foothold in their sector. Neald seems skeptical at first, but that turns to slight worry the more Delia says. Sarasi, though, is quiet throughout the explanation. Obi-Wan tries to get a read on her, but her shields are up and her expression neutral, save for the small frown tugging at her brow. When Delia finishes, Sarasi shakes her head. They're just rumors. There's usually a truth to them, even partly, Delia says. Obi-Wan nods. And I spoke to General Jin yesterday. You what? Neald interrupts with a cry. We run into a dead end no matter which turn we take in our investigation, Delia says sharply, coming to Obi-Wan's rescue without a moment of hesitation. Even Captain Panaka was unable to help, so I asked Obi-Wan if there was a possibility of finding out more about the Gar investigation. I didn't, unfortunately, Obi-Wan adds on, before either a frowning Sarasi or a fuming Neald can speak up. But he did mention they never had problems with our sector, asked if I could let him know if I hear of any rumors. Neald shoots first Delia, then Obi-Wan, an unhappy look, before he raises an eyebrow at Obi-Wan. You told him no, I assume. Of course, Obi-Wan nods, and, to his relief, Neald's brightly burning anger dims at that. The fact that he is asking, though, worries me. The Force seemed to urge for caution, too. I get the feeling that this could be important. Sarasi crosses her arms in front of her chest. The Force could be wrong. Obi-Wan bites back a hardly. Sarasi is being deliberately obtuse, which is very unlike her, and he doesn't want to make her current attitude worse. Not when he knows his next question is more than likely to do that already. Could you ask Milu? She has family on Gaul. They might know more. What does it even matter to us if Gaul leaves the Republic? She sharply asks him in return. As expected, and then waves a hand in the air. More power to them, to be honest. Next to Sarasi, Neil nods. I agree with Sarasi. I don't know what they told you on that cruiser, Obi, he says, raising an eyebrow at Obi-Wan. But the more planets that become neutral like us, the better. Obi-Wan sighs, rubbing his right temple with his index and middle finger. I'm not saying that they shouldn't leave, but... Sure sounds like it, Neild mutters. I am not. Don't put words in my mouth, Obi-Wan says sternly. And all I want is for us to realistically and critically look at the situation in our sector. They are rumors, but we have to think of the consequences if those rumors are true. If Gaul and Zar leave the Republic because of Separatist pressure, war will come to our doorstep whether we want it or not. Sarasi lets out an over-exaggerated sigh. Who is saying the Separatists are involved? They're the ones that shot him down, Delia answers heatedly, sitting in the chair next to Obi-Wan with her arms crossed in front of her chest and a scowl on her face. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Gaul and Zar leaving the Republic, Neild argues, and gives Obi-Wan a pointed look. Aren't we? We are, Obi-Wan says. But who's to say they aren't, let's say, encouraged to do so? Sarasi huffs. By the Separatists? Obi-Wan nods. For example. You get all of that from a secondhand rumor you haven't actually confirmed, Sarasi demands rather coldly, shaking her head as she gets up. Maybe you need to go see Rowenny, Obi-Wan. Your head seems a little out of sorts still. Now, I have another meeting, and I believe we're done here, aren't we? She heads for the door without waiting for a reply. A wave of helplessness crashes over Obi-Wan as he watches Sarasi leave. Her dissatisfaction, not hidden behind her shields but loud in the Force, is like a smack in the face. Neild, he says, his friend's name a plea as he turns to him. You have to at least see the point I'm trying to make. I do, Neild admits, even though it sounds rather wry. He sighs and brushes his fingers over his shortly trimmed black hair. But you're knocking on doors none of us wants opened. Obi-Wan frowns. Melodon's neutrality is a sacred thing, he knows that. He believes it, too. But there is a voice at the back of his mind wondering if neutrality isn't akin to ignorance in this case. He looks at the holomap with a frown and asks, So we should look the other way? The Force disagrees. Neild, however, agrees, says, We should if we know that war is what's answering. Before he, too, leaves the room, his point made and deeming the conversation over. Obi-Wan sighs, slumping in his chair. Come on, Delia says, offering him a small yet comforting smile. Let's go grab a coffee. They go to the coffee shop a few streets away from the governmental building. A small place that has a few tables outside that always catch the morning sun just right. Delia leans back against her chair with a pleased sound and tilts her face toward the sun, her eyes hidden behind a pair of sunglasses. They'll be fine, you know how they are. Obi-Wan sighs. Neild, sure, but Sarasi is usually more level-headed than this. Delia gives a small shrug. We all go a bit blind when someone we love is involved. She's probably just worried for Milu. She'll come around soon enough. They've dealt with harsher disagreements and tougher topics. Rebuilding a planet isn't easy, after all, but they've succeeded and become closer because of it. But this feels different. I hope so, Obi-Wan says. Silence falls between them for a moment, but Delia wouldn't be Delia if she didn't let it stretch for too long. Now that I have you alone, I've been wanting to ask, she says, and glances around to ensure that the tables next to them are empty, as if she's about to ask Obi-Wan to reveal his darkest secrets. She looks at him with an excited gleam in her eyes. What were the clones like? Obi-Wan blinks, taken aback by the sudden change of topic. We just had a major disagreement on the war, and you want to know about the clones? He asks with a raised eyebrow. Delia blows a raspberry. No need to get defensive, I'm just curious. Obi-Wan chuckles. Who's defensive? Shut up, Delia says, leaning forward and giving him a friendly shove before taking her coffee. Is there any sugar? She asks, glancing around. Ah, two tables over. Can you grab it for me? Obi-Wan does, waving it over with the Force until it softly drops down onto their table. So lazy, she teases, as she proceeds to drop an astounding 3 cubes into her cup. So, you were going to tell me about the clones. Others have asked, but the question has always come with hesitation and trepidation. But Delia's curiosity is genuine and bubbly around her. So, for the first time since he returned, Obi-Wan allows himself to talk freely about the clones, with a soft smile on his lips. Their wishing game where they'd go for leave, their curiosity, the alcohol, and the unbelievable amount of camaraderie and kindness he'd received while on board. "They sound nice," Delia says, sounding thoughtful. "Nothing like what the Holonet makes them out to be." Obi-Wan hasn't read much about the clones on the Holonet, but with their face at the front of the war, it's easy to imagine they're not kind words. It's easy to talk bad about those you don't really know. Delia hums in agreement, sipping her coffee. When she puts the cup down, she flashes Obi-Wan a grin. "And what about the commander?" Obi-Wan nearly chokes on his tea. He should have expected the question, with Delia's sense for dramatics and nose for gossip. Yet it still catches him off guard. It makes Cody's face flash in his mind, those warm amber eyes and a steady, comforting force presence. As if Obi-Wan needed to be reminded of that, of their bantering and heartfelt conversations alike, of how every time he sees his comlink, his fingers itch to reach out. "It's difficult," he settles on. Delia laughs. "'Cause you've caught feelings for the man." "I don't have feelings for Cody," he objects. He doesn't tell Delia he's working very hard on not having feelings for the other man. That's between him, himself, and his slowly wavering resolve. Delia keeps her eyes on him as she takes another sip of coffee, most likely considering if she wants to call him out on what she must believe is a lie. She doesn't, although her statement of, "but you know that in another future you do," isn't much better. Obi-Wan lowers his eyes to his tea. "A future that we changed." If this were Neild or Sarasi, the conversation would be over after that statement. They'd happily agree, comment on how blessed they are that Melodon is safe, and move on to other topics, if they'd have the conversation at all. But this is Delia, who is always brave enough to question the status quo without much hesitation. It's an admirable trait, even if it is one that gets her in trouble on occasion. And now she turns it on Obi-Wan, challenging his firm convictions with soft words and understanding eyes. "And yet, you still met the man in this one. In a galaxy with quadrillions of beings, you still meet him. Isn't that saying something? Isn't that the will of the Force you keep going on about?" It's like she has found the feeling in his gut, the whisper at the back of his mind, and given it a voice. "The fact that I met him once does not mean I'll meet him again. In fact, it's better if I don't." "For who?" "It's not guaranteed that we will even love each other. Just because I saw something in a vision doesn't mean it will happen," he points out. He means the love his future self held for Cody, of course, but the words feel like ash in his mouth, a realization swirling in his gut that makes him want to either meditate or flee. Weakly, he finishes, "It is only a potential, not a given." Delia scoffs, pointing an accusing finger at him. "And yet you let it rule your life." Obi-Wan freezes like a starship caught in a tractor beam, as if she's performing open-heart surgery rather than holding a casual conversation. Delia has cut open Obi-Wan's chest to reveal all his feelings, his insecurities, his ignorance. "You let it rule your life." Those words echo through his mind, turning more and more accusing as they do so, accompanied by a hot flash of failure. "Be mindful of your visions," he'd been taught as an initiate at the temple. "The future is always in motion, so they must be treated with great caution." Of course he hadn't done that as a 14-year-old coming out of a war zone with combat fatigue. Of course he hadn't thought of that when he'd had to carry the weight of the responsibility of keeping the peace and rebuilding a planet on his shoulders. And of course, after that, he'd forgotten that the future he tried to avoid might never have been a future at all. Unbeknownst to Obi-Wan's internal turmoil, Delia continues, as if she hadn't made her point already, with the efficiency of a vibroknife between the ribs. "If war comes, it will come to us regardless of your feelings for the commander. Didn't we just argue over that? I just don't want you to throw away something you deserve because of an out-of-context vision you had over 2 decades ago." She's right, he thinks to himself, feeling hot and cold at the same time. Kark, she's right. End of chapter 6.
It all crept upon you in the night, it got you and plagued your mind, it plagued your mind. Every day it passes faster than the last, didn't you?